we are for another episode of The Wrap, and I don't know, I may have just come in a little too soon on that one again, but we'll figure it all out. Guys, your eyes are not deceiving you. You're not backwards. You don't have some sort of myopia. That's our word of the day, by the way, myopia.
Myopia.
I don't even know if I'm using that correctly, honestly, but it's I know it is an eye
I'll
condition.
I'll cut it out if you're not.
No, just leave it. Actually, let's leave it. It's an eye condition. I do know that, and I really feel like it has to do with, well, I didn't like I don't know.
I
think it's myopia where it does, it like switches the image. It like reverses it or something like that, or makes it go upside down.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Could you just bear with us for a minute? Sorry, we've got to do this because I'll just be on this the entire episode thinking about myopia. Myopia, I'm sorry, is actually nearsightedness.
Oh, well, I got that.
Well, okay, you got that. I don't know what it's called. I can't remember. We'll have to figure that out. And maybe you guys in rap land know what I'm talking about when the image that you see, your eye does things with it and reverses it or flips it upside down.
That would be horrible.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't know what it's called. We'll figure that out later on. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. But your eyes are not deceiving you. We are backwards. We decided to just... We're keeping it fresh, you know? I can't always be over there.
All that to say he's standing on the other side of the table.
Yes, all of that that we just went through for who knows how long to say, I'm over here, he's over there, but we're both together and we're going to do this wrap episode today. Yeah. Continuing on and talking about our good buddy Moses today. Last week we talked about the burning bush that kind of... Again, we talked about Moses' life being split up into thirds, talking about that second third of his life as he's on the backside of the desert and he's tending sheep, and then God comes to him and calls him out of that. And so today we begin to move into like that last third of Moses' life, the beginning part of that last third, and really what are not just pivotal moments for Israel, but I really think pivotal moments for us as well as Christians.
Yeah.
I think so often, you know, this is what I've noticed about this Bible kind of journey and walking through the stories, is we so often look at the Old Testament and we're just like, what do we get out of the Old Testament? I mean, what is there in the Old Testament for us? But I think that at so many points, this is true, that Israel's story is really our story.
Mm. Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about Passover, which is a huge, huge moment for Israel. It's still a huge, huge moment and thing and remembrance in Judaism today. We talk about that. We talk about the crossing of the Red Sea. These are just massive, massive moments in their history where they finally, after 400 plus years, become free.
Yeah.
Here's the interesting thing about this, though, because I've read ahead of the story, all right? I read ahead of the story knowing that they may be free in a physical sense from a country, but they ain't free spiritually. Yeah. They still so often throughout their journey over these 40 years in the desert, in the wilderness, are still enslaved to so many things in their life. And we'll talk about that a little bit today and even next week. But it's just, like I said, really huge stories. I kind of said it this way on Sunday that what Passover is to Judaism is what, you know, the crucifixion and the cross is to Christianity. What the crossing of the Red Sea is to Israel is what the resurrection is to the Christian.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are really big moments here. Just kind of want to talk through this whole scenario. There's a lot going on in Exodus 12, 13, and 14. But we're going to try to condense that down into about 20 minutes.
Here we go. Strap in.
Yeah, here we go. Let's go. Put on your safety belts and here we go.
I could speed up your voice by 20% if you want me to.
Ooh, that'd be fun. We've already slogged them through myopia and I wasn't even right on that. So let's just maybe not do that to them. So talk about the story. It all starts and we come into the story actually on the tail end of the plagues in Egypt. We didn't really talk about that much as part of our story as we're walking through this. But we understand that Moses and Aaron go into Egypt. They talk to Pharaoh, said God wants people to go, let them go and worship. And we have now come through 9 plagues. And what often happens with Passover, and it's such a big moment that we often treat it as a standalone story, like it's its own thing. But we have to remember it's the 10th of 10 plagues. God has finally come to the point where he says, I'm going to break the will, the iron will of Pharaoh. And what does he do that with? What does he say? What's this final plague?
He kills all the firstborn.
Yeah, the plague of the firstborn, which basically says what? What's God say to Moses and Aaron, and what does he say to Pharaoh? Actually, let me ask it this way. How does this play out?
So that's a big question.
Let me ask it this way. How does it play out differently for the Egyptians versus the Israelites? Yes. That might be a better way to ask that.
So for the Israelites, they were told to sacrifice a lamb and paint the blood of that lamb on the doorpost.
Yes, and the tops and the sides.
When the angel of death passed through the camp, they would see the blood on their doorpost and skip over that house. Pass over.
That's where we get the word. Yeah.
Yes.
Passover, right? Yes. It would pass over them.
Without affecting them with the plague.
And really and truly, here's what I have to understand about this too. Because I think we always look at the story, at least I do it. I sometimes look at the story and I think to myself, the Egyptians were just really bad. That's why. That's why they got knocked upside the head with this. But we have to understand, this was a judgment that was very real, not just for Egypt, but it could have been for Israel too. Anybody who did not put blood was going to have the death of their firstborn. So it wasn't because Egypt was so bad and Israel was so good. They were both really not good. You said that Israelites, doorpost, topside, put the lamb's blood on there. By the way, just as a little aside, because I feel like we have to bring this up again, is like the whole scenario of killing this lamb.
Yeah, yeah.
I showed the picture on Sunday, didn't
I? Yeah, on Sunday you showed the
because it says very specifically a 1 year old or younger lamb. And I wish, maybe you can put the picture back up there again for our rap viewers if they didn't see it, but just
cute and cuddly.
Cute and cuddly. Yeah. And I said, it's too bad that it has to die. But you think about the whole process with the Israelite family of going out, selecting the lamb that you would then spend 4 days with. Now, I know that you have a pet. I never in my adult life had a pet, but I would understand and believe that there are some attachments made right off the bat with an animal.
Yeah.
And again, they know that this animal is going to be sacrificed on their behalf.
Especially the cute ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially a one-year-old cuddly little lamb.
Yeah.
But they spend 4 days with the family. It says specifically in scripture you are to take special care. So it's not like they just threw this thing outside and let it fend for itself for 4 days. Took special care of this, investigated to make sure that it was a lamb without blemish, it was spotless, it was whole. They became attached to this thing. And then at the end of those 4 days, they had to kill it. Just imagine the trauma that comes from that.
I really think that God did that to show the gravity of sin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because unless we see it, you know, we can explain our sin away for days.
Yeah.
But unless we see what it costs, you know, and I feel like that was God's very pointed way of saying this sin costs. Mm. You know, disobedience costs something. You know,
and I would say it this way, like it's easier to, again, take this story and keep it in its moment that was for Israel. But that's just as true today.
For us, yeah.
And again, bringing it into a New Testament time here is as costly as that gift was of that precious lamb that was killed in front of the family, in front of the kids, right outside the door, pool of blood sitting there outside of the door to remind you. And even after you cleaned it up, you know the blood doesn't clean up very well, right? So it's just a stain. Bringing it into New Testament times, that same precious, prized treasure was put on a cross for us in Jesus Christ. And so we've got that whole scenario and the trauma that is from that. Like, sin does. It costs. It didn't just cost back in the days of Egypt with Israel. It costs just as much today, and it requires a sacrifice. And thank God that we have that sacrifice that's been given in Jesus Christ over 2,000 years ago that we still live in to today. So that's the Israelites' experience of this whole Passover, but there's a whole other side of it. There's an Egyptian experience to the Passover, and let's just talk about that for a minute.
The death of the firstborn.
Yeah, death of a firstborn child and the death of the firstborn of your livestock.
Yeah.
So you're being hit from two ways. You're being hit in a familial way.
Right.
You're being hit like in an economic way too. Yeah. Can you imagine that? Probably like Egyptian wise, they estimate maybe like 2 or 3 million people at this time in Egypt. That's 2 to 3 million deaths of a child and 2 to 3 million of loss of livestock. It's really a hit from two different sides that I'd never really considered before and thought about, but two very different ways to experience a Passover. And this is the way I think about it. You know, we think, well, what But why? Why didn't Egypt have a chance? Well, they did. Pharaoh had every chance to do what God asked him to do and to obey that and to be obedient to what God was asking, and they didn't. And so because of that, there is a loss of life. And I said this on Sunday. That night, there was a loss of some sort of life. Whether it was a lamb or whether it was a child.
Right.
And it's just, it is sort of painful to kind of look at that and look at the Egyptians here. It's like, oh my land, could you imagine? It says that, in the middle of the night, there are whales that begin to just crescendo until you have millions of people just wait. That's got to be one of the most eerie, unsettling environments to be in.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
Man, if you think about that too, we've talked about how we see Jesus in these moments.
Yeah.
And we see glimpses of what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you think of what Jesus describes hell as. Of the weeping and
gnashing of teeth and wailing.
Yeah. It's like you're getting a clear-cut picture of, unless you apply the blood of the sacrifice of Christ.
That's bad news.
It's bad news.
It's worse, actually, than you could ever imagine.
Beyond measure.
Yes.
And so even in that instance, you see that shadowing of, Here's what this is all about.
So God has won a victory. He's won very specifically redemption, which means to loose or to unbind, is what redemption really means. And we're going to kind of speed the story up a little bit here. It's so bad and it's so painful that Pharaoh and the Egyptians literally pay the Israelites to get out.
Oh, yeah.
They sock them down with all kinds of goods, all kinds of riches, and they're like, get out of here. So they leave, and again, they're right on this, the largest human migration in world history, possibly, again, up to about 2 to 3 million Israelites.
That's insane.
Not to mention, it says that they're not just Israelites, but other people, probably Egyptians, who are just like, we want to get out of Dodge before anything else happens. So a large migration of people. I mean, I can't even imagine seeing 2 to 3 million people just moving across the desert. So they're moving throughout the desert, and then typical way that God's story goes, they begin to go in a direction that you shouldn't go.
Yeah.
God is leading them all the way in this, and if you can imagine this, and I'm going to do this the wrong way with the way the camera is going to catch this, but they leave Egypt. I'm going to try to do this backwards. You should come up here to the sea and the Mediterranean, follow that. That's called the Via Maris, and that would get you to Canaan very quickly, about 3 weeks probably. It's a major trade route, so you'd come up against people, you'd find food, find plenty of water, you'd find plenty of protection and stuff like that. God says that's not the way we're going to go, because my people will get scared because they're going to come up against Egypt. There were Egyptian forts and checkpoints all along the way, and they say if they come up against war, they're going to turn back and they're going to freak out. And so he leads them in a southeast way down further into the desert. Pharaoh sees this and he's like, those dumb Israelites, they don't know what they're doing. They're just wandering around the desert. What have we done, by the way? We have let our entire economy collapse. We've given away, and I love the way that some translations, we've lost our services. We've lost their services. It's a very polite way to put it. Like, we lost all our slave labor.
Yeah.
Okay? So they go chasing after him. It says he gets his best chariots, charioteers, the whole army. I mean, you can imagine this. They are breathing down the necks, and the Israelites see this and they start freaking out.
Yeah. Because there was no small army.
No small army. This is a major empire of the day. What do they freak out about, though? Because they have Pharaoh and Egypt coming down from behind, but what's in front of them?
The sea.
A big Red Sea.
Yeah.
It would have taken days for them to go around the Red Sea. They're like, we have no options here. We're stuck. We're pinned in. They're like, God, what did you do here? This is the worst military strategy. You've penned them in between a body of water and a really nasty, snarling army. And God says, and they do. They start to complain and moan, don't they? They start to freak out. And what does Moses say at the end of chapter 14? He says some very important things in about 13 and 14.
Just wait for God to move. It's basically what he says.
Stand still, stay firm, watch the Lord work for you today.
Yeah.
Those lines right there are so key, and I feel like what every one of us needs to hear, that we're working and striving so hard, we're freaking out, we're worried, we're anxious about what's going on in the world around
us. Especially
in
this time, day and time right now, that the whole world's going through.
Oh my man, we're just like,
What a reminder.
Just stand still.
Stand firm.
Stay firm, watch the Lord work for you. And he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We know the story. He tells Moses, you need to take your rod, your staff, hold it up. And it says all throughout that night, not only, we usually don't catch this, we know the Red Sea parting, but we forget about the cloud that's there. Mm-hmm. The cloud that leads him for 40 years, a cloud by day.
It separates them from the Egyptian.
Yes, cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. It says it goes from the in front of them to the behind them, so it separates them from the Egyptians. Right. It gives them God time to do this miracle. He gives time for God to provide for them. Moses holds his staff, the Red Sea parts, and 2 to 3 million people walk through. And this is something I didn't even think about. It says they walk through on dry ground.
That's not mud.
No, because if water separates, there's still mud that you get bogged down in.
In deep mud.
Yes. It gets completely dried up. Now, some people would be like, now, Ryan, scientifically, I just don't understand this. Can I just say this? There is no scientific explanation that you can come up. I mean, I read so many commentaries on that whole episode, and they're like, well, this is maybe what happened. Here's what I can tell you. God showed up in an amazing and in a supernatural way to make this happen and to protect, to cover, to free, and to rescue his people.
Yeah.
They all move through, and it says the very next morning, kind of at daybreak, everybody has crossed and the Egyptians are after them. That cloud must have lifted and separated. They go in head first, chasing after them, and then what happens? Moses brings that down, and all the waters, it says, go back into place. Just like that. It says not a single person who went chasing.
I think it's interesting, too. You know, you think, well, how did God trap the entire Egyptian army? And it says that he twisted their wheels. He threw them into total confusion.
Confusion. Yeah. I feel like the dry ground that Israel had gone through on, if you read, I think somewhere, it's in the Psalms, and I don't know what Psalm it is, there's a reference to that moment of the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. And it says that not only was there wind, but there was thunder, there was lightning, there was rain. And it's just odd to me, like, that wasn't on Israel, but that was on Egypt. And I think that's what that twisting the wheels is. It got wet again, it got muddy, they got bogged down in it. They should have known then, like, we should get out of here. But they don't. They're just so headstrong on, we are going to destroy the Israelites.
Yeah.
And the waters come back, close over them. And I hate to be crass about this, but could you imagine it says at the end of it that the Israelites saw all the bodies washing up on shore of those Egyptians? What a macabre reminder and just powerful picture of what God had done there. And we look at that and we're like, wow, that's a lot of death. Like God... Guys, here's the truth about life. Again, we talked about with the Passover. Outside of the covering and the protection of God, we are in a bad place.
Yeah.
We are in death, right in death's alley is what I would call it. So that's kind of where we end the story for this Sunday, is the Israelites are now on the eastern side, on the shore of the Dead Sea or the Red Sea, and you're like, man... And in fact, we didn't read it, but in Exodus 15, they sing this, they have a massive worship service.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest bands of the time are there, and they're rocking, and they're shaking tambourines, they're dancing, they're going crazy. But we know what happens next week, right? Oh. It doesn't last for long.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is, I think, the plight not only of Israel, but I think it's the plight of our lives, is that... what do we take away from the Passover? What do we take away from the Red Sea? Certainly some really miraculous things.
Right.
But I think that we see in it, I mean, like, this is so elementary, but it's so powerful. A God who saves.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, that element of we need to trust Him. You know, that
that's
whole
gonna come
thing
up again
of standing
next,
firm.
That's going to come up again next week, this idea of trusting, dependence, obedience. But God saves.
Yeah.
And again, here's the way I would say it. God is still in the saving business today. You know, like, oh, well, God's silent, God's not moving, God's not acting. That's a great story for Israel back in then, but what's he do? Mm-hmm. God still saves today. Yeah. He's still in that saving business today. If we would open our eyes and we would see the moments where he is, that's fascinating to me. I wish we had a moment where we could just step back and come above everything and we could see that if God was not in our life, that God was not actively working and providing in our life, how different our lives would be.
Mm.
Like, oh my land, I would have been toast and a goner a long time ago.
Well, it's always easy to look back on things, right?
Yeah.
And see, oh yeah, God did this. But we often forget when we look ahead that he did that. And then we fall right back into it, don't we?
It's an interesting thing that you bring up, because that is such a big part of the story, is we have what I call a remembering problem. Mm. I heard one person, a pastor, say a selective memory disorder is what we have. That will be the key that bridges us between Passover, Red Sea, and wandering in the wilderness for next week, is that same problem comes up again, that we have a remembering problem. And that is that is really the biggest part of the problem here. And if we could just look back in a good way to remember what God has done, or be able to pull ourselves out and have a perspective to see that, wow, like my life would be so much worse off had God not acted here. Like, I've gone through some tough stuff. My life has been really rugged.
And I think you bring up a really good point there of the fact of it's a perspective problem, right? We are looking too closely from the bottom up at this mountain.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? A bottom up view versus a top down view.
Right. And if we could see things the way God sees them.
Yeah. So I would leave with that today. That is like, what you know, what, I always hate to be like, well, what's the takeaway? What's the moral of the story? Because it's not like the moral of it.
The Veggie Tales. So we have learned applies to our lives today.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for that Veggie Tales.
You're welcome.
There. But you know, it's such a simple one. There's a lot of stuff we could take away from this. A lot of things that we talked about on Sunday. But like, God saves. And here is a very important part of it. It goes back to Exodus 14, 13, and 14. Stand still, stand firm, and watch the Lord work for you today.
Yeah.
So many of us in life, I know it's true for myself, we're striving, we're hoping to do good things, we want God to notice, we want to work and do things for God, to make Him love us, and he's like...
And we can't make Him love us any more than He already does.
Don't need that. Just stand still. I'm going to work on your behalf in spite of you, a lot of times, is what God says. And so I hope that's encouraging to you. I hope that's encouraging to anybody who would come across this at any moment and any day, that wherever you are in your life and you feel like, I just really need a salvation moment right now. I need God to show up and to protect me and to rescue me and to save me. God is still in that saving business today. And as we say so many times, and maybe don't say it enough, is, you know, if you come across this and you're in a moment in your life where you're like, I really need God to rescue me and save me, we would love to talk with you. There's easy ways that you're able to get a hold of us. You know, we obviously are right here on the New Heights Christian Church Facebook page. You can get a hold of us and message us. But we would love to talk with you and help you to understand and get to a moment where you can stop trying to save yourself and you can let God save you. And so, again, we're always grateful for you to show up and give it a little bit of time listening to us. And we will continue on with the story of Moses next time, and we will see you next time.
See you guys.